Today's edition of the Derek Hunter Podcast is brought to you by Life Change Tea.
Why go to getthetea.com? Because this important news could change your life. Socrates made a statement saying that all disease starts in the gut. Take care of your gut, and well, the rest speaks for itself. Life Change Tea is a wonderful way to aid in your digestion. Brew it, steep it, drink it, and feel it go to work. We at Life Change Tea have been around for years helping people just like you feel better. Lots of testimonials and lots of happy people. Log on to getthetea.com. That's getthetea.com. Getthetea.com.
Well, 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 we're back for more. Wednesday, hump day is upon us already. This week is moving by pretty quickly, which I don't have a problem with. I'm Derek Hunter. I am your host. Welcome to the program. So much to get to today. The stupid never stops. Never stops. Good Lord. You can email me, DerekAllenHunter@gmail.com. Thank you for downloading, sharing, telling a friend, all that good stuff. And don't forget about the Curse program every Saturday, pretty much, come hell or high water, at patreon.com/DerekHunterPodcast. Bonus episode for mere cost of $5 a month to support the program. Help feed my kids and house me and update this equipment. I do need to get a better interview mic. Because the one I have, I don't know, it sounds different. And there are other ones out there. I appreciate the guy who sent it to me. But it was used and it's abused. It's been abused since by me. So need to update that. But appreciate all the support, especially the word of mouth. Let me tell you quickly, word of mouth. Speaking of word of mouth, which you should put in your mouth, will help you get stuff out the other end at Life Change Tea. You go to getthetea.com and you get some Life Change Tea. It's a tea that will change your life. It'll get you regular and it will clean you out. When you're clean, you can absorb more of the nutrition in the food that you digest, that you consume, that you put in your pie hole. Get more out of that pie. That's right. You're obstructed, shall we say, from absorbing as much nutrition as possible from the food you eat. Life Change Tea takes care of that. It's a squeegee for your innards. Use as directed. You chug the whole thing, you're going to be on the toilet all day. You don't want that. It will keep you regular when used as directed. That's why I tell you to use it as directed. And then you'll notice more energy. Your immune system will be boosted. Your energy system will be boosted. Your life will be boosted. That's why it's Life Change Tea from GetTheTea.com. At checkout, enter promo code Derek, D-E-R-E-K. Click apply. You get free fast shipping on top of a great product. And top of great deals, getthetea.com, promo code Derek at checkout, click apply. All right, let's get on with it, shall we? Let's do this. Action-packed, audio-packed show today. This has got more audio cut for today's show than I think I've had cut for any show all year. 15 cuts. Will we get to all of them? That is the challenge. I don't know. But we do have a lot of ground to cover, and we should hit the ground running, as they say. So otherwise, you're just hitting the ground. That's no fun. I want to start off with, I want to show you what the liberals think of you. Just so you keep in mind, we all kind of know that they despise us, and that's fine. It's acceptable. It's accepted. It's not acceptable. They're delusional people. They're the party of tolerance. Now shut up and learn your place. There's a huge disconnect there. But every once in a while, they give us a nice reminder of what they really think of us. They say it out loud. The things they say in the green room. If you've ever been in a green room at a cable network, you know that they're just sitting around with a whole bunch of people you probably don't know. Maybe you've met before, but you're not friends with. And you're just shooting the breeze. Yeah, whatever. And these leftists, they bring that green room talk. You say things in the green room that you'd never say on the air. These leftists, every once in a while, because they've created such an insulated safe space for themselves, they bring that attitude to the air every once in a while. And some people just simply don't care. Some people just lost it and they're, I don't care. I'm too old for this, or I'm too rich for this. I don't care. I'm going to say what I really, really think. John Meacham seems to have reached that point. He must be fabulously wealthy, even though he ironically lost his gig with MSNBC and NBC News last year. I'm sure he's still getting some money somehow from it, because if you remember, he helped write Joe Biden's acceptance speech after the election, the big one at the drive-in. Like, there were like 15 cars there. Yeah. Huge, huge event for Joe at the time. Biggest crowd he'd drawn in about 3 years. But he helped write that speech, and then he went on MSNBC to critique it, never disclosing that he'd written it, right? Seems like, I realize the idea of journalistic ethics is now a punchline, but to the extent that you can recognize the concept, that seems like a pretty big one. That seems like a pretty big violation of them, right? Like, I wrote the speech. I'm not going to say anything, but boy, was that the best speech ever. I don't know who wrote that speech, but whoever did should be paid probably three times what they were paid for writing that speech, because it's wonderful. So even MSNBC said, that's a bit much, dude. We can't have you on staff. But they did say, rather than just simply firing him, they said, you'll be welcome on our airwaves all the time. We just can't be paying you. Believe that or not. The contracts aren't public, so he could well be. But he did appear on CNN yesterday to talk about the GOP. Now, what do you think is John Meacham's build? He's a historian. He's a very serious academic historian. And we all know how serious academia is now. You're a racist. What's your name? I missed your name. What's your name, racist? I'm just going to call you racist. That's pretty much academia right now, no matter what you're studying. So John Meacham is brought on to talk about the Republican Party. Now, they didn't remind the audience that John Meacham was a speechwriter, at least during the campaign for Joe Biden in this thing. But he has some thoughts about the Republican Party. And gee, where do you think they fall? Take a wild guess where John Meacham, shadow speechwriter for Joe Biden, where they John Meacham's thoughts fall on the Republican Party. Everybody's kind of going, not good. Yeah, that'd be a way to put it. In fact, let's listen to a piece of John Meacham, because it's going to set up the tone of today's program and what the left has become and what they're creating and how to combat it, which is most important.
There is not a rational actor on the Republican side now. And I want to be very clear. This is not reflexively partisan on my part. I have resisted the 1930s analogies. I'm not a Democrat. I'm not a Republican. I have voted for both. I'm George H.W. Bush's biographer, for God's sake. I'm not exactly a flamethrower. I really, really believe that the Republican Party, as currently constituted and run, is no longer a viable, productive part of the constitutional Democratic Republic.
No, I'm not a Republican. I'm not a Democrat. I just work for Democrats. I mean, for God's sakes, I'm George W. Bush's biographer. Oh, you mean you pitched under the guise of you being a historian to your publisher? You pitched, hey, how about I write a book about the president, the current president? And they said, okay, sure, yeah. And that somehow street cred for you to show that you're not politically biased? I don't understand it, but whatever. Okay, if that's who you are, then we all know who you really are, John Meacham. There's not a viable Republican Party. It's not a viable entity. It's horrible. It's disgusting. I've resisted the 1930s analogies. What's that code for? It's code for, I haven't been out there calling Republicans Nazis. Have you been out there pointing out the absurdity of that, of any of those Nazi analogies coming from leftists? No, you haven't. But hey, you do you, John Meacham. Of course, CNN just smiled and nodded and went along. Well, of course, you're fully credible. You're absolutely credible. No, but there's perhaps nobody more credible than you are, John Meacham. Now, why do I bring up this and John Meacham? Because you want to see where the end result of what you're getting from CNN, MSNBC, from the broadcast networks, from the newspapers. You want to see the end result of that. It comes to us from a traffic stop out in California, where a woman just goes after a police officer, a Hispanic police officer, no less. And she is sitting there talking about how the police officer is going to murder her. He's a murderer. He's going to kill her and her son. Now, you imagine this poor woman's son. She sounds like a real piece of, we'll just call it work, shall we? This took place in San Dimas, which is where the Bill and Ted movies are set, by the way. But we've got quite a few clips from this, because I want you to hear the whole thing. She doesn't swear. Good on her for that. She apparently has a history of filing false police reports, and no consequences for that, because why would there be consequences? I mean, you throw a brick at a police officer and have the charges dropped against you. You can burn down buildings full of police officers and have the charges against you dropped. So what's the difference in just being mouthy to a cop? But if you want to see what ultimately liberalism is like in action, watch this video and listen to this audio.
Good morning.
Which is, and the speed limit is 40, and I was going 38, so why are you harassing me?
You are correct. I pulled you over
because you're a murderer. Because yes, I started to record because you can't you're a murderer.
You can't be on your cell phone while you're driving.
I wasn't on my phone. I was recording you because you scared me.
You can't use your cell phone while you're recording.
I can record you.
May I have your driver's license?
It's at my apartment.
What's your apartment?
It's at my home. I'm just taking my son to his.
Do you have your driver's license?
I mistakenly left it at home.
Do you have a picture of your driver's license?
Yes, I do.
May I have it?
And can you call your supervisor, please?
Because I already did. He's on his way.
Good, because you're a murderer.
Okay.
Good, because you're a murderer. You're a murderer. You're a murderer. You're a murderer. Now, this guy is way more polite than I am. And I would have gone around her car and found everything wrong with it and going, all right, well, first of all, you're driving without a driver's license, so you're getting a ticket for that. I didn't know. Maybe it's the same everywhere, but I didn't know taking a picture of your driver's license was good enough. Seems like that'd be pretty easy to fake, but whatever. The cop could not be more accommodating. Apparently, this woman is known, so whenever you pull her over, whenever she gets anything, you call your supervisor or something. I don't know why else he would have already called his supervisor. But she seems like a lovely, lovely lady, doesn't she? Isn't that somebody you'd want to really get in the trenches with and vote like? Isn't that what you want in a voting friend? It continues. Listen to it.
And so you're giving me a cell phone ticket? Is that why you're harassing me?
Not harassment. Yeah. I am enforcing the law.
I have a right to and record the police when they're harassing me.
By all means, but you can't do it while you're driving.
I wasn't texting or none of that.
Do you have that
you
picture?
And you scared me and made me think you were going to murder me.
Okay, well, I'm sorry you feel that way.
Well, that's not just a feeling, you're a murderer.
Okay. Can you zoom in on that for me,
Jim? Sure.
Thank you.
And I'm perfectly legal, and I'm a teacher, so there.
Congratulations.
Murderer. You're a murderer.
God, she's a teacher. Apparently she is a teacher out there. I think at a community college or something like that. But you imagine your kid at any level having someone like this as their teacher? Now, we hear this all the time. We played you audio the other day of the college professor going at the kid who dared say that police were heroes. No. Police, they get away with murder all the time. They get away with horrible crimes all the time. This is one woman's audio or audio of one woman, but it is illustrative of so much, such a wide swath of the left that it is worth playing and pursuing because it is the ultimate result of what John Meacham was saying. You know, there's no rational, logical person. There's no leader. There's nothing good over there on the right. Well, if everything on the right is bad, then everything on the left has to be good, right? and they can do no wrong. And yeah, the right is just out there to oppress you, out there to get you, out there to otherize you. And all of this insanity that you're hearing spewed from this woman. We're not done. Two more to go.
What's your last name? I can't see that there.
Well,
if
here you
stop,
go, murderer.
Stop shaking. Zoom in on that for
no,
me,
No, because
right?
You're scaring me. Oh, you're threatening to kill me and my son. Can you give me
okay.
The
well, you, iPad, you, I'll tell you what. You keep smiling.
Yeah,
you're on camera.
You're trying to threaten to kill me. I'm
I
not
didn't
smiling.
Say that.
You're the one who's crazy.
Hold that still. I can't see that. Is this your car?
Yes, it is. You're trying to say I stole my own car because you're jealous?
Yeah,
is that what
I don't
that's
think
about?
So. You wait for me right here, okay?
You're jealous?
She seems like a lovely lady. Something tells me she doesn't have plans this weekend if you're looking for somebody to come over to your house and be absolutely awful. Now, I will note, the police officer, this is his own body cam. San Dimas has not yet provided, or I don't know if they're going to. Los Angeles County has not rolled out body cams for everybody. So this police officer had his own body cam for his own protection, so because people just file complaints and lie about police all the time. And as we've seen time and time again, a lie that is right there in the narrative will get national coverage, will get acceptance right away. So then the supervisor shows up. And this woman really shows, I should say, I guess, since it's relevant in every news story about everything these days, the woman is a woman of color. I guess I should have mentioned that earlier. But it seems irrelevant in the grand scheme of things, except that you begin to see how once critical race theory really digs its claws into somebody, into the cavernous space behind their eyes where a brain should be, what it becomes after it fully metastasizes. So now the supervisor is there, and she still keeps going on, and she becomes, instead of overtly racist or covertly racist, she becomes just openly, just flat out racist.
Citation, all you need to do is your signature. He's only citing you for using your cell phone while you're driving. That's it.
Hey, good man. Signing inside the red box right there.
For him being a Mexican racist. What is that name? Gasso.
It's on the citation, ma'am.
Here you go, Mexican racist. You're always going to be a Mexican. You'll never be white. You know that, right? You'll never be white, which is what you really want to be.
There you go,
dear. You
want
to be white.
Have a good day.
You want to be white so bad.
Doesn't she seem really lovely? I bet she's single. And there are poor kids sitting in the back. What do you think is going to happen to that kid as he grows up? Now, there are two possibilities. Sometimes, and hopefully this is the case, children see their parents being complete and total jackasses and thoroughly reject everything. Like Tommy Chong's kid doesn't smoke weed. You know, Tommy Chong made his name and his fortune and everything by marijuana jokes. I don't know if Cheech and Chong actually smoked pot or not, but there was a ton of money in that for him. And I assume it was probably used as well, especially since he sells bongs now. But his daughter saw the drug life, the drug culture, and said, that's not for me. I'm not ever going to do it. I'm not interested. So the kid could go that way, but more than likely the kid looks up to his parent, right? His mom. Who doesn't look up to their mom unless they're, well, this mom is wildly abusive, but I think most people look up to their mother. She's instilling this victim mentality and this distrust of police in her son. How's that going to work out for Junior there in the long run? You think it's going to be good? Think it's going to make him a productive member of society and really inspire him to great heights in reaching his potential as a human being? I hope so, but only as an example of what not to do. This is liberalism. This is the natural extension of John Meacham saying, look, there's no good Republican out there. They're all crazy. They're all evil. I haven't called them Nazis yet, but they're Nazis. As a historian, by my not calling out the Nazi analogies, it's a wink and a nod saying, they're not Nazis. That's all I'm saying. And it has no end. It has no bottom. It is who the left is. It's how they view you, no matter what you are. And if you are a police officer and you happen to be Hispanic, oh, you're just a Mexican racist. You're just a Mexican racist. You're no good. You're nothing. You're nothing. You're going to murder me. You're going to murder me. You're going to murder me. She actually filed a complaint with the police department, apparently unaware that he was wearing a body cam and all of this was captured on video. No consequences will come of her for filing a false complaint because why would they? Actual people arrested rioting spend just enough time to get their picture taken in custody before the prosecutors drop charges. This woman, she'll probably get a humanitarian award named after her. Dan Abrams, ABC News, tweeted out that video, the audio you just heard. He says, the most shocking part of this racist rant against this incredibly patient officer is that this woman had the nerve to file a complaint against him. And she did. She filed a complaint against him because why not? What are the consequences for filing a false complaint against a police officer, a false one? What is it? There are none. There are none whatsoever. There's no consequences for almost anything if you're on the left side of the aisle now. Boy, if you were in Washington, D.C. at all on January 6th, the FBI will kick in your door as they did to a couple in Alaska. Where's Nancy Pelosi's laptop? They kicked in their door because they were in Washington, D.C. Now, they didn't get anywhere near the U.S. Capitol, but they are on a manhunt for grandmothers and grandfathers across the country who dared be unhappy with the election results, who dared looked at Joe Biden and said, how in the hell did he get the most votes ever? People look at that, and if you don't think that's at least weird, you simply aren't paying attention. But yeah, this woman filed a complaint. She has a history of filing complaints, and there are no consequences for it. If you remove consequences, and this is why consequences are so important. If you remove consequences, what are you going to get? You're going to get more of the same, period. More of the same. There's no consequence for anything. The curfews, how many times have we seen in the past year? Some little spineless, spaghetti noodle-backed liberal with a bowl cut, metrosexual, gender-fluid mayor comes out and says, due to the unrest, we are instituting a curfew starting at 9 p.m. No one is to be on the streets at 9 p.m. In the name of safety, okay? Please, please, please just go home at 9 o'clock. And then what happens? The media is always there. The media makes this worse, but they're always sitting there in CNN or MSNBC. They'll have a little countdown. 3 minutes, 28 seconds till curfew starts. And there's a sea of people. Things are burning. People are getting riled up. People are getting ready to tip over cars and maybe plotting their Christmas shopping already because they're like, well, maybe we could protest down by the Best Buy. Huh? Maybe we protest down by the Target over there. And 9 o'clock comes along and what happens? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Nobody out there in that mob has been impacted whatsoever. They are not facing any consequences for violating the curfew that was instituted because of their bad actions, which should have realistically landed them in jail the night before. But again, there are no consequences. Police are ordered to stand back and say, well, give them room to destroy. Let them blow off some steam. They obviously care deeply about someone they've never met, and if they'd seen on the street, would probably have avoided because he was a junkie. Let's just give them the room that they need to deal with the grief. Because everybody knows that nothing impacts a complete and total stranger more than the death of a complete and total stranger who was a drug addict, right? Man, that's like the best, the creme de la creme, the chef kiss of society. Mwah! When a junkie dies, we all feel it. And if that doesn't inspire you to go and lift a new 70-inch TV out of the electronics department at a Target, I don't know what will. In the quest for justice. That's what you get without consequences. You go, oh, a night of protest turns into a week or longer of riots. Why? Because why not? What are you going to face? If the night before, the auto parts store and the dollar store were completely ransacked with zero arrests and not even a wanted poster or a tweet saying, hey, have you seen this person? Then why not go out again? Why not? That's a serious question. There is no answer to it. Why not? Let's just go. And then you get the, by the way, the Target in Minneapolis that was looted and burned, you know, the guy, the famous footage of the guy whacking away at the cash register with a hammer. He at least had some forethought. Some people just grabbing anything they got, can get their hands on. This guy knew where the money probably was. It probably wasn't, but if there was going to be money somewhere, it might have been inside the self-checkout. This is in the middle of COVID. Not that many people were rocking cash at the time. But he was bound and determined to find out. His potential payday was certainly better than people walking out with junior miss-sized t-shirts. So you got to give him props for that. And unless he brought his own hammer, that meant he went to the hardware department, found a hammer, and then went back up to the front. I just don't think that, you know, a store-bought hammer, a regular roofing hammer, is going to get through a cash register that is designed to not be gotten through by, you know, low-grade explosives. That's just me, but hey, points for trying, points for originality. But that Target is being rebuilt, and outside of it, they have a mural painted up by Black Lives Matter activists that include a building on fire. You can't make this stuff up. Like, oh, it's about the struggle. Oh, the struggle. What, the struggle to open that cash register? You got to bring the jaws of life with you or something that is hydraulically operated. You can't just get into that thing with a hammer. I suppose that's worthy of a mural in the liberal world. Who knows? Weirder things have been. I grew up in Detroit. A crackhead got a mural. It's amazing to me how many murals on the street are to people who are drug addicts. Not really sure that's who you should elevate, but that's just me again. I'm a cynic. But you're looking at this world that the left has created, where John Meacham go on CNN and say, there's just not a good Republican out there. There just isn't. There's not a sane one. There's not a rational one. They're just horrible, horrible people all across the board. And, well, what do you get from that? There's no consequence to John Meacham. Actually, it'll probably make his next book, whatever it is, whatever the subject matter is, more profitable. Why? Because why not? He knows, and his publisher knows, that now that he's a free agent and not associated or tied or tethered to MSNBC exclusively, that he can go on both CNN and MSNBC. And sell his book. And if it's about the right thing, it will have an audience, a receptive audience there. And guess what that leads to? That leads to, hey, John Meacham got a 7-figure book deal. He's been really crazy lately. He has been wildly offensive lately. I should be wildly offensive. I should go overboard. Maybe that would be the key to me getting more money. And if you don't think these people think like this, you haven't been paying attention. Michael Beschloss. Remember Michael Beschloss? I don't even know how you pronounce his or spell his last name. But he is a lunatic. He's also a historian. He's considered a presidential historian. He is on Twitter spewing some of the dumbest things you can possibly imagine. I'm trying to look this up because it is, he's a presidential history. He's written 9 books. He's all over television. Every time there's, you know, an inauguration, anytime there's a State of the Union, anytime there's an anything, he is brought out to give it the stamp of seriousness. My goodness. Michael Beschloss says yes. Michael Beschloss is a rabidly left-wing lunatic, just like the rest of them. Was he always? No, he wasn't. You could watch him and go, I didn't know that before. You could get information from Michael Beschloss. Now you can't. now you get the liberal talking points in a really weird makeup, because he does his own makeup at home, spewing things that would get him booked on cable television more. His response, by the way, to Biden's first speech to Congress, I think the style was classic Biden, but in terms of ambition, absolutely Rooseveltian. Also, Johnsonian. Just like you're just making stuff up. Just say, all right, it reminded me of this, that, or the other thing. You're a historian. You don't have to be a political activist, but a non-political activist is not about to get on cable television. If you want to get on Morning Joe, you are not going to get on Morning Joe by saying, you know what, I think that Joe Biden is wrong about this. I can remember 9/11, for example, and as a historian, I am fully aware of the existence of Pearl Harbor. Instead, when Joe Biden comes out and says this is the worst attack on the country since the Civil War, the attack on our democracy, January 6th is the worst since the Civil War, a historian comes out and says, quote, Joe Biden is absolutely correct in saying that January 6th was the worst attack on our democracy since the Civil War. Okay. Yeah, you were alive for 9/11. I don't know how old you are. You weren't alive probably for Pearl Harbor, but as a historian, you should know that. Instead, his next tweet was not a, and here, let me explain why, because liberalisms not only don't need to explain anything, they can't explain things. Next comes the big old smooch on the butt of the people who will put him on TV, because that is the ultimate goal for these people. Michael Beschloss, after saying that Joe Biden was right about the Civil War and January 6th, said, quote, after a long year, Rachel Maddow and Brian Williams and Joy Reid and Nicole Wallace are all together again tonight for MSNBC special coverage from 30 Rock about Joe Biden's speech. We're getting the band back together. Four left-wing lunatics and Michael Beschloss. Oh, they're all back together. It's just wonderful. It's amazing. I love this. And you wonder why people hold these people in contempt. It's because we're returning the favor. They hold us in absolute, unadulterated contempt. And I absolutely encourage you to hold them right back. Hold them the exact same way right back. It's what they deserve. They deserve absolutely nothing less. Now, I want to get to this, the start of this audio, because we're talking about human beings. But the left has done a miraculous job of making things racist, too. Anything racist. If you like it, it's racist. They're grousing now. Friends is racist. Why is Friends racist? Was there an episode where Phoebe refuses to date a black guy? No. Friends is racist because they didn't have any black friends. Now, what would they say if there's one of Ross is suddenly a black guy? Well, they just did that because they wanted to celebrate diversity. Apparently, Doctor Strange in, Falcon and the Winter Soldier or whatever, the latest Marvel TV show on Disney. I haven't watched it yet. I fell asleep during the first episode, which didn't bode well for me, but I will watch it. It's apparently super duper uber woke. And there was allegedly a scene filmed with Doctor Strange, Benedict Cumberbatch, the character Doctor Strange, all part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. It's what makes Marvel unique and I think makes Marvel so popular, is that none of this stuff happens in a vacuum. But it was cut, according to reports, because it was just another white guy adding in there. Okay, like, was it any good for the story? Did anybody ask, is it any good for the story? And you're not allowed to ask if it's any good for the story. It's just, you've got to have that little checklist, and you've got to have your little calculator out and figure out what percentage of what population is represented there, and if it goes too far one way or the other way, changes must be made. Well, not one way, only the other way. Changes must be made. Things must be cut. So you get, frankly, a big movie star to do a cameo on your TV show. And they're making another Doctor Strange movie, so it behooves the studio to kind of go, all right, well, let's just remind people that Doctor Strange exists. And instead, the diversity police come in and say, no, you're out. You're done. We're going to cut you. Thanks for coming in. And the thing is, you're paid if you're the actor. You're already paid. The money's in the bank. But it doesn't matter. These people, you want to know why people hate Hollywood? It's because the Hollywood hates the people. That's why. You want to know what liberalism looks like and how it rots a business from the inside. I saw this story last night and I couldn't believe it. There's a company called Basecamp. I don't know what they do. Something to do with computers and digital organization, online, whatever it is. It's irrelevant. It's kind of one of those things that operates behind the scenes. It's apparently worth $100 billion. I did look that up last night. One third of their workforce has quit. Now, it's not that many. They have less than 60 employees, but 20 of them walked. Why? Because on internal discussion chat system that they had set up inside Basecamp, which has been around since the early 2003 or something like that. Because internally, they started arguing about woke politics. And the owners of the company and the bosses at the company tried to put a stop to it. Like, hey, we're supposed to work. How about you work at work? And the woke set didn't like that. And they started comparing that to white supremacy, because the founder of the company is a white guy. This is white supremacy. This is a white supremacist country. This is a white supremacist industry, blah, 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 blah. That victimhood mentality. Well, the chief operating officer, whatever he was, a guy who'd been with the company for 18 years, spoke up, basically told everybody to get back to work, said he's not going to, doesn't buy into the fact that this is a white supremacist country. He didn't say white supremacy didn't exist. In fact, he explicitly acknowledged that white supremacy does exist. It's probably three guys living in the middle of Montana that nobody will ever meet. But that white supremacy is this prevalent, all-causing of all evil thing. He said, no, that's wrong. I don't believe that. This country is fundamentally good. It's the best country, blah, blah, blah. He's a conservative. He also apparently committed the sin, according to TheVerge.com, committed the sin of once tweeting out, or not tweeting out, but sharing internally a Breitbart article. And that meant he's obviously a closeted white supremacist, just nobody noticed it in his 18 years. Well, he was suspended from the company pending an investigation because the woke crowd, rabble-rousing employees said, this is ridiculous. This is him telling us not to discuss the problems of white supremacy while on the clock is white supremacy. And the spineless owner said, all right, we'll suspend him. We'll launch an investigation. The guy, a few days later, resigned from the company because how do you go back to work like that? And after winning over, after overpowering their left-wing boss, they're still resigning en masse because they're offering buyouts for people who wanted to get out. And so they've lost a third of their workforce. The mob gets what they want and they're moving on. The company be damned. I don't know what the company does. I don't know how the company recovers, but it is so ridiculous what corporate America has become. And you ain't heard nothing yet. You ain't heard nothing yet. Everything, according to the left, about this country is bad. You can't fix something. You could fix something if it's just broken, if it's just tweaked, if it's just got a problem here or there. You can fix that. You can tweak around the edges. The left doesn't want to do that with this country. They want to destroy it. They want to remake it. They want to turn it into something it is not. It was never designed to be. In fact, it was explicitly sort of designed never to be. And this country is a country of individual liberties, individual rights. No other country protects, guarantees the rights. Our government was the first, maybe even really the only, founded on the concept that we are born with certain inalienable rights and expressly in our Constitution says the government can't mess with them. The government cannot come in and get them, can't limit them, can't screw us out of them, can't jail us for them, can't punish us for them, though they're desperately trying. They are right now using the idea of social capital and the idea of social pressure to limit your First Amendment rights to free speech, assembly, practice your religion. The Second Amendment, they're desperately trying to limit them. They can't do it legally yet. But what do you think the next step is once you get people used to the concept happening in the private sector? Then you go, oh, well, we should probably make sure that nobody says those words. Nobody has those thoughts. Nobody does those things again. And we need some laws to make sure that we all agree they're so universally horrible that they need to be banned. So why not put some teeth to the law, to the idea that they need to be banned? That's how it works. Nobody would sit idly by and just say, well, that's not true anymore, but most people would not sit idly by and let their rights be chipped away, be destroyed. Let the government pass something that says, you know what, you can't say things that offend other people, for example. You're basically living at the whims of a leftist mob. But if you can lose your job from it, if you could... your life be destroyed, not be able to function in society anymore. If you call out enough people, people will get the message. And then sooner or later, say, this is what we want. We should probably make this a law. You numb people for it. It's the Novocaine before the government comes in and drills out our rights. That's the problem with it. And in order to remake the country to the extent that they want to, they have to destroy what is there. So everything, the 1619 Project was a big part of this. Everything is racist. Everything is fundamentally racist. Police are racist. Streetlights are racist. You name it, it's racist, racist, racist. Because who wants to be there on the side and sort of defending racism? Nobody does. So along that line, did you know that grocery stores are racist? It sounds too stupid to be true. It's not true, but it sounds too stupid for an argument for somebody to make. But the Business Insider, which is a fairly popular website, is making that very argument. I'm not kidding. They put out a long video. I just have a few clips from it to illustrate the absurdity. Now, how are grocery stores racist? Well, you know how you have the different aisles for different, there's the cereal aisle, there's the chip aisle, there's the cheese section, there's the dairy section, and there is the Mexican food section and the Chinese or Asian food section, the Indian foods. That there's the racism right there. Segregation by food. Daring to organize a grocery store in a way that makes it, shall I say, easy, quite frankly, for customers to find what they're looking for. Listen to this clip and the subsequent clips, and you just see how far the left has gone down the crazy rabbit hole.
Here's a loaf of Italian bread in an East Coast supermarket chain. It's in aisle 12, the bread aisle, surrounded by other types of bread. So if Italian bread exists in the bread aisle, why do Chinese noodles exist here? In the international aisle. These crunchy Chinese noodles or crispy wonton strips are typically served as an appetizer or snack in American Chinese restaurants. So why aren't they in, say, the chip aisle? It doesn't seem to make much sense. So is there some hidden racism in your supermarket?
There's some hidden racism. Yeah, there is. It's right there. The horrible, horrible. Did you know that? Well, first of all, nobody eats them just as chippy snacks. I get them with my egg drop soup. They're used as like crackers. They're Chinese crackers, whatever they are. They aren't actually even Chinese. So it doesn't really matter. It's an American invention. Might have been somebody who was Chinese, but in America, who invented them. But that's what they are. But, you know, how about putting them where they'd most likely be found? What are those things we get at the Chinese restaurant? They're probably in with the Chinese food. Okay, well, that makes sense then. I'm sorry I asked. I feel stupid for having asked. Well, you should. But this is the predicate upon which this video trying to convince you that grocery stores are racist begins. It continues.
It's a question David Chang asked in his podcast last year.
If you go to the ethnic food aisle, that is sort of the last bastion of racism that you can see in like full daylight in retail America. How do we help kill the very notion of what is the ethnic food aisle and why does it even exist anymore?
To Chang, the foods in the ethnic aisle are accepted parts of American cuisine. Yet they are still sectioned off and labeled as something else, something not quite fully American. In fact, the great irony of those Chinese noodles we mentioned earlier is that they're actually an American thing. You'd have a pretty difficult time finding them in China.
Of course, you'd have difficulty being able to whine about it in China, too, because if you whined too much, they'd throw you in a gulag and subject you to slave labor as they slowly starved you to death. But hey, what's the difference? Why are these things segregated out? To make them easy to find. Okay? If I want a curry sauce, I'm not going to go, is that going to be next to the ketchup? Where would that be? No, I know exactly where it is. Because it makes sense there. Curry is Indian food. Hey, that's probably going to be in the Indian food segment. If I want to make Kung Pao chicken, where is the Kung Pao sauce going to be? Is that going to be buried in a sea of 750,000 different varieties of barbecue sauce? Yeah. You want to put it there? Good luck. Because after about 5 minutes of staring, if even that, I'm going to go, well, I'll just have something else for dinner. And whatever sales they get from me will be gone. And I would probably have been committing commercial genocide or something if I did not persist and continue to buy the things that I buy. Do you imagine having this much time on your hands? Wouldn't you crave having this much time on your hands just to go around the world trying to find things to be offended by? And then what is it about you that suddenly, you know, the world, not only do I think this, the world needs to know. The world absolutely needs to know. And the world will thank me for this. It's not done. They've got more evidence of racism in the grocery store.
Chang isn't the only one who feels this way. Kim Pham experienced this growing up as well. She's the co-founder of Omsam, a meal starter kit company that features Southeast Asian sauces and seasonings.
I remember kind of this like sad aisle in the back of the store. It's kind of neglected and really just like small and a hodgepodge of items. And I remember not necessarily understanding what it stood for, but really just being like, oh, it's kind of embarrassing that we're back here. And like, why do we need to grab some ingredients from back here? So felt like a lot of internalized shame.
You need help. You need professional help. We need this really random thing that most people don't eat and, I don't know, fish oil or whatever. And so we've got to get their fish sauce. Where are we going to find that? Oh, it's way here in the back. Oh, no. First of all, it's not way in the back. I haven't been in a grocery store where it's stuck in the back. In my grocery store, it's the second aisle, actually. But that's beside the point. Making things easy to find should be a priority for somebody who is in the business of trying to sell things, right? No, I don't like the way that where you've placed my product makes sense to me. I would like it to be mixed in somewhere where it doesn't make sense. Because if you're looking, if somebody's going to make some sort of chicken sauce and they want sauce for it, and they go to where the sauces are, they're going to be reminded of stuff they actually like. Whereas if they go, you know what, I kind of want the Chinese kind of chicken thing that I had. I don't know, what kind of approximation do they have? And you go to that section and you might pick up her product and go, I'll give this a shot. I won't now. Now that I know she's a lunatic, I won't. I wouldn't want to otherize her. Good God. I was having such a good day until I saw that groceries that I like were inconveniently placed, allegedly, in a supermarket in my mind. Again, this is what liberalism does to the brain. It rots it. It's continuing to rot, though.
Who gets to choose, like, what is ethnic, right? And why have some cuisines and communities been able to transcend that aisle? So like Italian food has largely left that. I would say Greek food it has largely left that. And so you can almost tie, frankly, colorism to how, you know, what cuisines are considered ethnic.
When Italian food moved from the ethnic aisle, Moroccan, Middle Eastern, Indian, and many other foods were left behind. This created the theme of white American foods as mainstream and everything else as different, strange, or non-white. So if proximity to whiteness is what gets you out of the ethnic food aisle, it's no wonder Chang and Pham feel alienated.
When you actually think about its origins, it's literally centered around kind of white Americana as the default, right? And makes sense then, but now it's 2020. We're changing American society and changing American diet, but this continued existence of this aisle, which largely has not changed, just continues to other POC communities. And now as an adult, I like understand that. I can put words to those feelings of shame and feeling different and othered.
Oh, I'm feeling different. Doctor, I'm feeling different and othered by the location of Chef Boyardee relative to things that are wildly and significantly less popular. Why do I not have the shelf space that Chef Boyardee has? Well, might it be your sales? By the way, Italian food is still segregated. It's its whole section because there's 10 million different pasta sauces and then there's 10 million different shapes of pasta. It's not like they've got their, they're handing out cheese and anything sitting there at the end of the aisle. I don't know where these people shop, but it is not anywhere where I shop. By the way, when I want Asian food, I like Asian food. I like making Asian food. I make sushi occasionally. Pretty good at it, too. But when I want Asian food, guess where I go? There are Asian grocery stores around here. H Mart. Great selection of Asian stuff. You know, it's hard to find in H Mart. Chef Boyardee. Tough to find Chef Boyardee. I don't go to the H Mart for Chef Boyardee. I go there to get bulgogi sauce and shaved meats. And if you want to see a variety of fish, go there. The market takes care of it. If this woman's product, whatever it is, or sauce for stir fry, if it becomes so wildly popular that people actually want it rather than, you know, in the middle of the day, she has time to sit down for a long video chat with Business Insider. Not really something a CEO of a successful company can do. She would have the shelf space and product placement that everybody earns. But you have to earn it. The problem is nobody wants to earn anything anymore. We want to be just like everybody else. Well, then put up some numbers like everybody else. And you will be. I guarantee you, the grocery store doesn't give a damn. Oh, I love this product. It's flying off the shelves. What is the race and or ethnicity of the founder of the company? Ooh. We could make a lot of money with this product, but stuff it down the aisle. They say nobody ever goes to, which, by the way, is a wildly popular aisle. You imagine, again, having this much time on your hands? To be offended by this sort of stuff? They're not done. One more cut.
If the ethnic food aisle makes people feel othered, has roots in colorism, causes ethnic brands to experience less foot traffic, and doesn't make much sense to begin with, then why don't we just get rid of it? Supermarket experts like Lempert think getting rid of the aisle and restructuring based on ingredients could confuse customers. But Italian food is proof that shoppers can adjust, and to Pham, a system that hasn't been changed in over 70 years is completely out of touch.
Vanessa, my sister, sometimes frames it. She's like, these products should be categorized like what as they are. So like in the condiment aisle should be like ketchup next to garlic achar, next to fish sauce. And like that should be normal. I don't think they're intentionally racist, but I think they are rooted in an outdated view of American society and how we eat. And I think in 2020, it just doesn't cut it anymore.
God help us all. And out fish sauce. I was going to get some ketchup, but then I said, why not put fish sauce on our hamburgers? Who doesn't want that? Why not just leave things the way they're working? If you become such a hugely successful business that you command more shelf space, guess what you'll get? You'll get more shelf space. But the left and the younger generation, the millennials, have become just a generation of Veruca Salts. They want everything and they want it now. And they don't want to have to earn it. They deserve it. They exist. Don't you understand? By their mere existence, they deserve certain things. That sense of entitlement, that sense of consequences be damned. Back to that woman in the car yelling at the police officer. All going back to the little acorn of John Meacham, and there isn't a damn good Republican out there. That mentality, this is what it spawns. This is what grows from it. This is where it comes from. Your grocery store will organize in any way, shape, or form that they believe will make them the most money. Period. End of story. To put a fine point on this discussion about racist grocery stores, we go to this story from the Cornell Daily Sun. Yes, Cornell University, one of the big schools, very important school. Their headline, Food Cultural Appropriation, colon, it's personal. Yes, she says, I'm a first generation Chinese Vietnamese. Both my parents immigrated to the United States as a result of the Vietnam War. Blah, blah, blah. She goes on to write about how disgusting it is and disturbing it is that she sees Vietnamese restaurants that aren't owned by Vietnamese. Now I am seeing restaurants not owned by Vietnamese Americans selling banh mi or whatever and modifying it to have American cold cuts or pork belly rather than the traditional meats from Vietnamese cuisine. When restaurants take cultural foods and modify them, they disrespect the culture and those that were ostracized for it. Okay, you gotta pick a side here. In my book, I wrote about a college where the students went on a protest rampage because the Chinese food they were served in their dormitories was not prepared by Chinese people. And this was cultural appropriation. You can't have it both ways. If you want to move out of the small, we're not buying this stuff because nobody's buying this stuff aisle, maybe focus on making a product that people want and marketing your product to everybody for everything. But if you just want to be the victim, well, then maybe you can become vice president of the United States. What the hell do I know? You know, I'm sitting here and I'm looking at the interwebs, by the way, and I see this story and it's one of those things where you just roll your eyes. Nothing against millennials. The vast majority of millennials, I married a millennial. I'm like a couple years older than millennials. So, I just barely escaped that label. Got saddled with other labels. But this is the woke generation. And it's like the future, our kids are going to be so screwed. I'm going to have to spend the vast majority of the rest of my life trying to make sure that my kids don't become like this. It's just sad. This is from CNBC, the headline, 44% of older millennials already have a chronic health condition. What? Like the oldest millennials, I think, are 40, maybe? No, younger than that. But you look through the list of the chronic conditions, and they go, yeah, because they did a survey from the general public versus millennials. Do you have any chronic medical conditions? If so, how many? Now, 50% of the general public said no, nothing. 56% of older millennials, not sure what they're categorizing that as, but say none. But then, yes, one chronic condition, 19% of both. Say that. Two conditions, 15% of the general public and 11% of older millennials say that. And then three, four, and five. Apparently, all these people claim to have things. So what are these chronic conditions? Some of them are genuinely, they profile a woman with multiple sclerosis, who's been living with multiple sclerosis for 20 years. That is definitely a chronic condition. But then some of these other things, the top ones are migraine headaches. Somehow 16% of the population has migraine headaches, but 26% of millennials have them. I wonder if you just threw hypochondria in there. Oh yeah, I think I have hypochondria. I've heard that used, if they would have answered yes to that. Major depression. 20% of the general public has major depression. 23% of older millennials do. Asthma It's 16 in Gen Pop, 19 in that. Then diabetes, they're lower because diabetes is something that is clinical and can be proven. Hypertension, 32% of the population has hypertension. 15% of these people aren't even 40 yet. And they've got hypertension. Neurodevelopmental disorder. This is where it gets into the Jimmy is a little bit jittery in class. Here's a Ritalin. The general population when it comes to neurodevelopmental disorders is only 7%. With millennials, it's 13%. Here you go. Just take that pill. Have an Adderall and a Ritalin, and let's see how those work together. Inflammatory bowel disease. The jokes write themselves. 12% of millennials. And so I would have thought it was a lot higher than that because I thought that a lot of them were full of, never mind. High cholesterol. Somehow, people under 40, 11% have high cholesterol already. Then psychotic disorders. Only 6% of the general public reports that. This is self-reporting. 10% of millennials do. Couple that with 10% of millennials who say they have hyperactivity, which, again, ADHD, which is just an easy way for teachers to go, I don't know, I'm boring the kid, so he's fidgety in class. It must be a disorder. Medicate that creature so I don't have to deal with it. Goes on down from there. But substance abuse disorder. I'm sorry. I know that the conventional wisdom is that substance abuse addiction is a disease. It is inherited or whatever, but it is completely based on activities. So substance abuse disorder, 8% compared to 4% of the general population. I think you look at some of these things and the elective ones that you can't prove or disprove, the millennials outpace the general population. You know, like, oh, I've got an eating disorder. You have an eating disorder? Yeah, I've totally got an eating disorder. Eating disorder for the general population, 7%, but for millennials, 12%. Can't disprove it. Whereas high cholesterol, 25% of the general population has high cholesterol. Only 11% of millennials have high cholesterol. Because why? Because there's a test for it. You can't test somebody for an eating disorder. You just kind of have to take their word for it. When it comes to hyperactivity, you can't, I guess you could hook up monitors to them and watch them run around and bounce off the walls all day. But the fact that you can just say it, declare it, and you've got a victim card, it's an entry-level victim card, but it's a victim card nonetheless. And that is the coveted position of the left, is to be a victim. Be a victim. So you can just claim, oh yeah, I've got ADHD. I've got a psychotic disorder. I'm like that CIA woman the other day who has severe anxiety disorder. I don't want somebody in a position of authority, in a position of importance where life and death decisions could hang on their decision or their data, their information, having anxiety disorder because, you know, having too many spaghetti sauces at the grocery store to choose from, if that's triggering to you, I really wouldn't want to see you in a this person could die if we do this, but they could die if we don't situation. You're going to be in a ball in the corner. All of the disorders that you can just have to take somebody's word for are higher in millennials than the general population. That's really the takeaway. The ones that you can prove, the ones that you can test for, the ones that you can, you know, medically, we're looking at the charts and the results from the tests, you have X, Y, or Z. The general public, generally older Americans, are more apt to have. The things where you just kind of, I feel bad. Suddenly, the millennials pop up ahead. And it all goes back to you desperately want to be a victim. Under critical race theory, you're either a victim or a perp. Sometimes you're both, but you're at least a perp all the time. And so you want to have both. Say, look, I realize I'm a part of enabling systemic this and cultural that, but I also suffer from, and you can't pick on me because, and it just becomes a giant woke-off. If you've seen the movie Zoolander, when Derek Zoolander and whatever the guy Owen Wilson was playing's name was, and they're sitting there and they're arguing about who's the better, dumber model or whatever, and they said, all right, we're going to have a woke-off, and Billy Zane comes up and says, it's a woke-off, it's a woke-off, and they go to the, or it's a walk-off, it's a walk-off. They were doing the model walk, who can do it better. It's just like that, except it's a woke-off, and we don't have somebody cool like David Bowie to come along and judge it. We've got the idiots in the mainstream media to sit back and not question anything, because you can't question anybody. You say you have hyperactivity. What does that mean? Well, it seems like by my 12th cup of coffee in the day, I can't stop shaking and I have difficulty falling asleep at night. Doc, I'm a victim. Can I get a support animal pass for my little pony so I can take it on a plane? And the doctor just probably sitting there, little piece of his soul dying every single time. But signing it, there you go, prescription for this loser to fly with a peacock or a toy pig or something. This is what you get when you fetishize victimhood. But there is pushback to some of this, at least in the corporate world, not pushback from the corporate world to these people who you should never. Somebody tweeted this out this morning, and I think it's an absolute bit of wisdom that maybe I don't have any tattoos, but if I were, this would be as close to a motto as I can come up with. They said, never hire anybody with their pronouns in their bio. Yeah, never. There's no good that's going to come from that. That's absolutely 100% true. Unfortunately, companies do that all the time. Coca-Cola was, of course, the latest example, coming out firmly against a law about which it knew nothing in Georgia and then in Texas and then in other states, saying we just want people to be able to vote. And now people are even admitting, even David Axelrod, who was Barack Obama's brain in the 2008 campaign, said today there was Georgia law is not anything like Jim Crow. It's too late. The damage is done. The All-Star game is moved. Now Stacey Abrams is trying to save her political career after ruining a bunch of people's businesses. And so the tune has changed quite a bit. You notice that's not much in the news like it used to be anymore. You want to write about what happened to the border crisis. What happened to voter suppression efforts there, Jen Rubin? But Coca-Cola, New York Times, or Post reports, woke Coke has gone flat. Once everything else, when all other options have been exhausted, the left will do the right thing. Coca-Cola has paused its controversial diversity plan that includes penalties on outside law firms if they fail to meet racial diversity quotas after intense backlash. Could you imagine? You're the best in the business. We want to be in business with you. But you need to hire some people that meet the following descriptions. And here's like a bunch of paint sample strips. We're going to need five of everybody who matches every single one of those on staff right now. I don't care what they do. The pause comes after the orchestrator of the plan, Coke's former general counsel, Bradley Grayton, abruptly resigned last month after less than a year on the job and has criticisms of the quotas mounted. Gotta love that. We don't believe in quotas, but if you don't have exactly 22% of your staff looking this way and 12% looking that way and 3% this way, we couldn't possibly do business with you. Some questioned whether Grayton's policies violated Title 8 of the Civil Rights Act, or Title 7 of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, which it says employers can't treat people differently based on their race, you think? Scott Leith, a spokesman for Coke, says Grayton's replacement, Monica Howard Douglas, is now reviewing the plan. Quote, when there is leadership change, it takes time for the new leaders to review the current status of the team, organization, and initiatives. Monica is fully committed to the notions of equity and diversity in the legal profession, and we fully expect she will take the time necessary to thoughtfully review any plans going forward. Last I checked, Coca-Cola is not in the legal profession. So what in the hell does Coca-Cola care or have a say in who works at a particular law firm? Coca-Cola is in the making diabetes and obesity business. That's about it. In January, Graydon made headlines when he unveiled his plan to penalize outside law firms that failed to meet the new diversity quotas by slashing their fees or cutting ties with them altogether. God, it's got to be nice to be a liberal. The accountability. So you think, well, finally, some accountability. This guy got the boot. He abruptly resigned. When you're at a certain level, nobody really gets fired. They abruptly resign. Well, he'd just signed a contract to serve as a consultant, Coca-Cola CEO James Quincy. In that position, he'll be making a hefty $12 million over the next year. That included a $4 million sign-on fee and a monthly consulting fee of $666,666. Good God. Coca-Cola, of course, Coca-Cola is facing mounting pressure because of boycotts, because of conservatives going, we're not going to play this game with you. If you want to speak out against voter integrity, go ahead. We can get our diabetes someplace else. Or, more horrifying to them altogether, is just not drink this teeth-rotting sugar water at all. The horror. The horror. You reap what you sow. Go woke, get broke, man. That's that simple. Couple of last things before we part ways. This should be bigger news because it's going to be problematic for the prosecution in the Derek Chauvin case. One of the jurors who said that, no, I never did this stuff. The Daily Mail reports, one of the jurors who convicted Derek Chauvin of murder in the George Floyd took part in a Black Lives Matter protest last summer in Washington, D.C., and then lied about it on a questionnaire sent out before jury selection. Could be grounds for appeal. A photo posted on social media shows Brandon Mitchell attending an August 28th event commemorating Martin Luther King Jr.'s I Have a Dream speech during the 1963 March on Washington. It shows Mitchell in a high school high school basketball coach standing with two other men and wearing a T-shirt with a picture of King and the words, "Get your knee off our necks," and BLM. He's also wearing a baseball hat that reads Black Lives Matter. Mitchell admitted the photo is of him on that date, but defended attending the rally, claiming it was not explicitly a protest against police or a commemoration for George Floyd. Only George Floyd's brother and sister spoke at it. I'm no lawyer, but this seems like, considering this, there'd be some grounds for appeal. Couple that with everything else, the giant settlement right near the end of the case, the jury not being sequestered, all of that stuff, seems like pretty big grounds for appeal. I don't know. We'll see. But I find that interesting. It's just so much easier not to lie. Just don't lie. Lastly, I want to play this bit of audio for you of Joe Biden, because what is a day that ends in Y without Joe Biden, President of the United States, stumbling through his own words like a fool? This was him trying to sell his massive spending bill and massive tax hikes.
The reason I'm bothering to do this is I keep hearing on the press, Biden's going to raise your taxes. Anybody making less than $400,000 a year will not pay a single penny in taxes. And we will not increase the deficit either.
Well, that's big news. Seems like you should have heard of that. Everybody, he's lowering the tax rate for people making less than $400,000 to zero? I'm in. I'm game. Let's do this. Of course, that's not what he meant. But he's also lying, if you just take what he tried to say there. Our taxes are going up. Maybe not our income taxes, but everything else. He might not be aware of it, though. Poor old guy. We're out of time for today. Thank you for listening. We'll be back tomorrow with another exciting episode. Be here or be talked about.
So is there some hidden racism in your supermarket?